From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And welcome back. And as we like to do every Saturday, Kayla Blakeslee's with us from Fort Wayne's Morning News. You hear her every morning from 5 to 9. If you're like me, I've got an earbud in my ear right now. Well, I've got another set at home because I plug in my phone to WoWo, and when my alarm goes off in the morning, it goes off with Fort Wayne's Morning News. Does that make you feel uncomfortable? Do you get excited in the morning?
It makes you feel really special.
I think Pat Miller just woke up, and I think probably he's listening to me.
Wow, it's what I think about every single morning. Wow, Pat just woke up to my docile tones.
You know what? It's not that I mind women lying to me. I mean, let's be honest. I'm used to it. But when you do it, it just has a special something.
Listen,
about it.
You should know I'm in a feisty mood today.
I can tell that.
I am ready for this election to be over with.
Why?
I'm ready for May 8th. I'm ready for May 8th to be here.
Yeah, which is the day after.
Right.
But we are a political current event station. You should be excited and thrilled for what's going on right now.
You know
now.
What? It's this one, I don't know. I'm just trying to remember. I've been at WoWo for well over a decade, covering politics for well over a decade. And I'm trying to remember a time when races were so nasty, when they were so ugly, when all the candidates were so needy, and I can't really recall a time. Has it been like that for you?
I will say this. I told Kim that this election, and not just one office, but two or three of the offices being sought after, I have never known it to be as contentious,
yeah.
And the contentions seem to be coming out of very weird places.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
It's not what I expected. I've got people in one race where at least two parties in that race are kind of like going at the throat of each other. And 4 years ago, these are the same two people that would have been arms around, slapping on the back, and, hey, I'm for you and all that. But the only difference is I'm running for this now, and this is my baby to rock. That makes me highly and wildly uncomfortable.
Yeah, it makes me really uncomfortable as well. I think he said, he nailed it. It's just been so contentious, and I can't recall some of the races being this contentious before. And, you know, it's one of those things, Pat. I mean, there's one of me, there's one of you. There's about 14 different races, 13, 14, that I'm personally tracking.
Yep.
And in each of those races, there's multiple candidates. I mean, some of them have 8, 9 candidates in them. And again, there's only one of me. There's only one of you.
Yep.
So it is hard to keep up with all of the, you know, 40, 50 plus people that you're trying to keep up with. Who stands for what? Who believes in this? Who doesn't think that? Who's got this moral compass? It's just hard. It's hard to keep up with it. So I'm ready. I'm ready for May 8th.
And all this contentious attitude is right here in Indiana. And somebody came up to me the other night at a dinner I was at, and they said, won't you be glad when the election's over?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah. They go, but then, oh man, then we've got the fall election. I said, are you talking about now about the presidency? And they went, yeah. And I said, ah.
Yeah, I had the same conversation. I was like, oh, that one will be fine. I'll just pay attention to the one.
That'll be a piece of cake.
Yeah, that one will be a piece of cake. But you know what? I will say this. I was chatting with State Representative Bob Morris on my program a while ago. And I said, you know, Bob, it comes down to this, at least with these primaries and why they're just kind of so nasty, or we'll go with the word contentious, why they're so contentious this time around. For a lot of these races, I mean, really the primary is winner take all.
Yep.
You know, whoever wins the primary is who will be our next governor or be our next sitting congressman person representing the third district. You know, so I think that's just why they're all so heated, why there's a lot of mudslinging going on or what have you. But speaking of the governor's race, that's actually what I wanted to get into with you today.
Okay, now let me be honest with you. You asked me the other night, because I had an event I was at, I did not hear a lot of the governor's race. In fact, I listened to the very end of it because somebody said you have to listen to the last question. But now, from what you've told me, I need to back up and I need to listen to all of it to get it all in context. Because I'll tell you, the last question was.
Are you talking about the third district debate or the gubernatorial?
No, the gubernatorial.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, no, the gubernatorial, and it seems like things were a little nutty, and maybe.
Time out. You've not listened or seen this debate.
Just the last question of it.
Oh my gosh, Pat. Just to put it into perspective, on my show Wednesday morning, coming out of the gate to talk about it, I found an audio clip, the audio of a train wreck. And that's the audio I used on my show.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it fun?
I suppose some people might define it as fun. It was an absolute colossal failure. and you can put those words in all caps, all the exclamation points. It might be the most unprofessional, out of control debate I have ever witnessed, because I watched it instead of just listening to it. And I place the blame on the Indiana Debate Commission. I mean, I don't think it's a secret that we've known that the Indiana Debate Commission is biased, right? That's not a secret.
Yeah, right?
And it's been like that for years. However, I didn't think they were so biased to go as far as selecting a moderator that was going to put his Democrat on full display during this GOP gubernatorial debate. Yeah. To set the scenes here for you, there were five candidates on the stage: Eric Doden, Brad Chambers, Suzanne Crouch, Jamie Rittenour, and who am I missing? Curtis Hill. And they were all on the debate stage. Senator Braun was not there. He was back in D.C. He got called back to work because he had to vote on that very important foreign aid package.
Probably the biggest vote of the spring.
Yeah. So for those of you who give him, you know, crap for not being there, he was doing his job that he was elected to do. So I, for one, was glad to see him go back to D.C. for that. And he should be thanking his lucky stars.
He
was not
there
at this debate. I'll tell you a little behind the scenes. So his camp, his team, sent actually a statement to the Indiana Debate Commission that they wanted read prior to the debate, because it did kind of explain why he wasn't going to be there. Because if you don't follow WoWo or you don't follow politics, you're like, hey, where's Mike Braun at, right?
Yeah, because if you don't, they're going to be left to their own, and then they're going to come out and go, well, Braun wasn't even there.
He obviously doesn't care about
the people of Indiana.
Well, if you watched it or if you listened to it, you know the moderator, this statement was not made. I don't know what happened to it. I don't know why it wasn't read.
Okay, time out.
Yeah.
So the office of Senator Braun, candidate for governor, sent a prepared statement, because you and I have been at banquets and all kinds of things where so-and-so is not there. They'll either send a statement, they'll send a video of a statement.
Yeah.
So they sent something to the moderator.
To the debate commission is my understanding.
Okay. And they didn't play it right?
They didn't even, the moderator was supposed to read this statement. That did not happen. If you want to get into it, we can get into all of it now. What actually did happen at one point, it was quite comical. At one point, the debate moderator, which, by the way, his name is John Schwantes. I think I'm pronouncing that right now. He does have a pretty lengthy, impressive resume when it comes to the broadcast world, even when it comes to Indiana politics. He hosts that show called Indiana Lawmakers that airs on PBS.
Right, right.
It also is sent out to NPR affiliates, if that tells you anything that you need to know. Yeah, when I came across that little detail, I'm like, I don't need to read any more about this guy. But he truly made this entire night about himself and his disdain for the GOP instead of making it about Hoosiers. In fact, when the whole debate got underway, which is when you do housekeeping and when that Senator Braun statement really should have been read, he never told the candidates, you know, how much time was going to be granted for the questions. He never told the candidates, like, the rebuttal process, if there was even going to be a rebuttal process. In fact, 7 minutes in, I want to play this just to kind of really set the scene here for you. If it was Brad Chambers who had to ask 7 minutes in, so we're still in the first question here, like, hey, bro, like, what about a rebuttal? This is how chaotic this was. Take a listen.
Very good. We'll go on to another question, and we will return to the order. I think I may have inadvertently botched the order in which you were before. So,
down the question. How do we rebut if we want to have a tag on or a rebuttal?
I'll tell you what. Because I'm a kind, generous person, and I'm going to look at you to keep you on track with this aforementioned smile, 15 seconds. Go ahead.
No, I'm not asking. I'm just asking the process by which. I don't have a rebuttal right now, but in the future, I'm sure to have a rebuttal.
All right. Now you have that ace in the hole. Very good. All right.
Will you call me, or do I raise my hand?
Well, it's not a classroom, but raising of the hand would be good.
This?
And if certainly if somebody mentions you or calls you out on a policy, I will make sure that you are given the time to talk to that.
So how much time was wasted? Because, again, there was no housekeeping in the beginning. I mean, Pat, you and I have moderated how many debates? Like, that's the number one thing. And what I'm shocked is, I will say this as well, usually the candidates have to agree to the rules, the guidelines, whatever you want to call them, prior to the debate. And I'm like, were the rules never set out? Like, I'm so confused at why this was such a cluster.
Well, and not bragging or boasting on us. Well, if they'd let us run it, here's what would happen. The most contentious debate I think I was ever part of was the senatorial debate that we held out at the Ramada Inn.
Yes.
And we had three Republicans there, one of them being Braun, one being Rakita, and who was the third one?
I don't even remember
whatever.
Now.
But We laid the ground rules out.
Was it Todd Young?
No.
No, it wasn't Todd.
We laid the ground rules out well in advance.
Yes.
Because and that way, when something came up, because I remember at one particular point, I actually said, okay, gentlemen, if you recall, here's what we said. Nobody has approached the chair in the way that we said, and so I can't expand myself, because if I drop what it is I'm doing from here, mm-hmm. the whole debate falls apart.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And so then I went back, and they looked at me a little astounded. And I remember I looked at somebody, it was Todd Rakita, who I like, but I looked at him and I said, Todd, look, if this upsets you, I'm very sorry. But here, somebody on this stage right now has to be willing to step into the floor of the Senate and follow Senate floor rules.
Yes.
If you can't follow the rules
of a debate,
here, I mean, you don't leave me much hope.
Well, unfortunately, this moderator, I mean, he kept cutting off the candidates. I couldn't make sense of a lot of the questions that were being asked. He truly was trying to pigeonhole these candidates into corners. It's actually really funny that he makes that comment about, like, this is not a classroom to Brad Chambers. He makes it rather smugly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's funny that he said that, because throughout, I'd say like half the debate, he did this wonky, which I hate this. I've seen this in other debates before, but I hate this whole, raise your hand, yes or no. Would you, and then they're usually hypotheticals.
Yep.
Would you vote this way? Would
yep.
you do that? Yes or no? Is President Joe Biden the president? You know, stupid questions like that. And so it's kind of comical to me that he made this comment about it not being a classroom, because I felt like I was at a kindergarten classroom during this debate.
Yeah, not third grade.
But the one moment that I really, circling back to Senator Braun, that I've been trying to get to here, is that one moment, again, this whole debate running amok, willy-nilly, some candidates got 15 questions or 15 seconds to respond, some got 90, some got 30, I don't even know. But one of the moments when we're talking about Senator Braun and he wanted the statement read and it wasn't read, instead this moderator felt the need, I believe they were, again, having this hypothetical moment about talking about the CHIPS Act and whether or not, you know, you would have voted for it. And all of the candidates were like, you know, that's a dumb question. Suzanne Crouch said she doesn't like hypothetical questions. So they all kind of vaguely answered. And then the moderator decided to answer for Mike Braun. It was the most, like, egregious thing I've ever seen as a moderator. I mean, that is the biggest no-no, besides botching the order. That's also a really big no-no as a moderator, which he did all night long.
He purported an answer to the question that he asked, almost as if he were Mike Braun.
Correct. It was staggering. Now, listen to what happened. At this point, these candidates could not take this man anymore, particularly Curtis Hill. So take a listen as he's wrapping up his statements as if he's Mike Braun.
The crossroads of America in terms of...
For not speaking for Mike Braun, you're doing a pretty good job of it.
Well, that's the... Earned applause. That's good. All right.
Yeah, and that earned applause was obviously not for him. There's another. Let me just play you this other bite, because I know we're up against your clock. But you just got to hear again what we were working with for this debate. Take a listen to this last clip.
Again, show of hands. A significant number of Republicans in Indiana, certainly, and elsewhere, agree with President Trump's claim that the 2020 election was stolen. Raise your hand if you agree that the election was stolen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That question cannot be answered yes or no.
That is
not a yes or no question.
That's funny, because I asked it as a yes or no question.
Well, it involves facts that
Counselor. Counselor, is Joe Biden the duly elected president of the United States?
Yes.
All right. Anybody disagree? Very good.
Wait, I just want to make a statement, because I just think that's an unfair question. Let's just be very clear. What happened in the 2020 election that everybody should agree on is that it wasn't properly.
I'm going to stop it right there, because that's Jamie Rittenour there at the end. And she goes on for quite some time, and he allowed her to before he ends up cutting her off. But you can just see of what a joke it was.
Is this the first debate this guy has ever moderated?
This
is unbelievable to me.
I was chit-chatting with some, let's just say, colleagues of mine that are on the other side of the aisle from myself.
Okay.
And even they couldn't figure out why the Indiana Debate Commission selected him. Even they said this particular moderator likes to be the smartest man in the room. Was a direct quote from one of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle who knows him. And I'm just like, but why? Why? You know, this is really what I think it comes down to. I wish I could talk to someone at the Indiana Debate Commission, because either A, the commission was completely blindsided by how terrible this guy was going to be, or they didn't vet him properly. So either way, I think it's an extreme, like I said, a colossal failure on behalf of the Indiana Debate Commission. And unfortunately, we Hoosiers, we the voters, were the losers of the night.
Yep.
Because we didn't really get... I was so lost. I need so much clarity. I've had a lot of the candidates back on my show just be like, hey, I would really like an answer to this question.
Yeah, can you shoot straight with me here for a minute?
Yeah, because I left there scratching my head, I'm speechless, and it takes a lot to make me speechless of just how terrible this was.
I mean, because I'm sitting here thinking, okay, there's five on the stage. One of them is not. The one that's not there is a very powerful part of the six.
Mm-hmm.
He's not... Well, he's not maybe the leader. Okay, well, he's not number six in place either. Okay, it's kind of important. I think I would have rather have seen them do something. Was this broadcast live on TV and radio?
Yeah, yeah.
See, this is one of those times where, and I've seen others do this, I would almost rather that they would have recorded it and then played it the next day as if live.
Yeah, because maybe they could have edited out some of the nonsense.
Don't even do it.
If
you know that Braun is going to be tied up in that vote and we can't do it until 9 o'clock tonight, or if everybody's available, we can record it at 8 tomorrow morning, that would make much more sense to me.
Yeah, instead of trying to force it to be live.
This is just a bugaboo. Again, the medium is awesome. The medium should not dictate what happens in a debate.
Correct.
And that's what's happening
here.
And
that's exactly what was happening here. It was all about the medium. It was all about the Indiana Debate Commission. It was all about this moderator. It was not about Hoosiers. Not about voters.
Do we send a joint letter or do you send one yourself? Kayla and I are available.
I don't know, but next time, 4 years from now, I'm going to advocate that we host a gubernatorial debate for Pete's sake, because that was just, my view on moderators, they should be seen but not heard.
Yep.
Yes, you ask the question, then you sit back and you remain a good soldier, as hard as it may be. And I know that it's hard. I have a hard time shutting my mouth as a moderator. I don't always enjoy doing it, right? Because of
I hate it.
Right.
You can get more ulcers if you go to moderate properly.
Right. You're just letting the candidates say whatever they want to say, not fact-checking, not pressing them for more or for clarification. But that is the role of the moderator, because voters get to decide.
Yep.
Voters are the ones who should decide. They didn't answer that question, or that was a terrible answer, or, I wish we could be pressed on that. That's the voter's job, not the moderator's job.
No.
You are to be seen and not heard.
You're exactly correct. Kayla, thanks so much.
Thanks.
But now you've ruined my whole weekend. I mean, it's Saturday. It's Saturday. When I leave this place at 3 o'clock, I should be able to go home, kiss the lovely Mrs. Miller. Honey, I'm going to lay down for about an hour. Then let's go out and have a nice day. I got to go home and watch this whole debate.
No, I was just saying, consider yourself lucky that you were spared that hour and a half of misery. You know how, like what they say with train wrecks, that you can't look away?
Yep.
You know, this was one of those things I said to my husband, we're watching, I'm like, can I turn this off? Would that be bad to go into work tomorrow?
Real quick, your husband is a very smart guy.
Incredibly smart man.
Successful businessman.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't run waist deep in politics like we do. What was his takeaway? I mean, how was he responding as you watched this thing?
He at one point said to me, do we have to keep watching this? This is what he said. And he has not really followed the gubernatorial race, simply because I think we all know who the race is going to go to.
Yeah.
And he's kind of viewed it that way. However, he said to me he was really impressed, and this was actually a common theme, by Jamie Rittenour.
Okay.
We finally got to see her on the debate stage. She hasn't met a lot of the polling thresholds and financial fundraising thresholds to be on the debate stage. He was actually really impressed by her for not being in politics, for being a mom of five. You know, she came out there firing. Like, she's this Trojan horse that came storming in, and I wasn't expecting her to erupt the way she did. I don't know that we would have saw quite a performance from her if it wasn't for that moderator.
Would you think it would be a smart move if the one that wins the debate or wins the primary ends up being Braun or Doden, or pick your candidate, mm-hmm. if they came out the next day and say, you know, one of the calls I got last night was a call from Rittenour congratulating me on winning this race. And I just need to be honest with you guys. I extended to her the opportunity to take 48 hours to consider whether she would want to be my running mate as we go into the fall, because I can't think of anybody else I would rather have next to me at the statehouse. To me, that would be enormously huge.
I'm going to say, if I was running for the gubernatorial race and I won it, that is the first thing I would do.
Yeah.
Well,
after you offered it to me.
And
then I would tell you, I can't do it.
Yeah, of course, after you.
So there you go. Kayla, thanks so much.
Thanks, Pat.
Listen, next time you're on, try to be prepared and try to know exactly what it is you want to say and have an opinion, okay?
Yeah, right. I'll see what I can do about that.
There you go. All right, everybody. She's going to get out of here now for the weekend. You and I are going to take about a two-minute pause, and then we'll be back, and we'll kick out the balance of the program here on this Saturday edition of the Pat Miller Program. And we'll be back straight ahead right here on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and on the WoWo app.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Miller. Let's go first to the newsmaker line. Standing by is our 3rd District Congressman from here in Northeast Indiana, Jim Banks. Congressman Banks, good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Pat. It's like old times.
I know. I found the desk and everything.
So, do you still know how to operate it?
No. It's just like I was always here. So I didn't know then. I don't know now. And, you know, when I say something or I do something or I hit the wrong button and Derek's in there in the newsroom and he does that face slap against his own forehead, I'm like, yes, I'm back. So things are going well for you?
It's going very well. I've been all over the state this week. Monday night I was in Zionsville. Tuesday I was in Evansville and Vincennes. Last night I was in beautiful Fowler, Indiana.
Oh, yeah.
And tonight, I'm up in Angola, and I'm here with a special guest. I'm going to hand the phone over to her, all the way from Tennessee, Senator Marsha Blackburn, a conservative leader in the United States Senate. I served with her in the House before she went over to the Senate, and she's here campaigning with me today in Indiana. We're at the Steuben County Republican Lincoln Day Dinner in Angola tonight, and it's an honor to have her here. I'm going to hand the phone over to her, and I let you, since you interview me all the time, I'm going to let you talk to her instead.
Sounds very good. Yeah, thank you, Jim. Yeah, Marsha Blackburn, who she served down in the state, down in Tennessee from 99 to 03. Then, as he said, she was in the House from 13 through 2019 from the 7th District. Since then, she has served in the Senate. And I'd heard Jim Banks say many times before that he always liked working in the same house with Marsha Blackburn. And Senator Blackburn, it might be great to have the two of you working in the same Senate.
Let me tell you, we are looking forward to having Jim Banks in the U.S. Senate. I need some conservative freedom fighters in that Senate so we can continue to get this country back on track.
Well, and he will help you do that, and he'll stand with you just as you have driven some leadership, even in your own party, a little crazy sometimes because you're standing for principle more than you're standing for just a party position. Jim Banks has set himself up doing exactly the same, and I'm sure you know that about him.
Oh, absolutely, and that's why we want him. He is such a principled conservative. And when you look at the first principles in our Constitution, our nation's founding documents, when you look at our Bill of Rights, when you look at that aspirational document that is our Declaration of Independence, you realize how important those individual freedoms and those protections are for each and every one of us. And right now, we have an administration in the White House that every single day is chipping away at those freedoms and at our rights. And so, of course, it's, you know, you just listen to what these guys are doing sometimes and what they're saying, and you think, I've heard it all. And then they go do something else the next day that's even worse than what they did the day before.
Yeah. Yeah. Just by the time you say, well, it can't get any worse than this. Okay. Just be quiet and keep that to yourself, because that just pushes on to go ahead and do that. You know, one of the things that I did not know about you until last week, I was doing some reading on your behalf, realizing we'd be speaking together today. But you are from originally Laurel, Mississippi. And my wife and I had never heard of Laurel, Mississippi until about 2 years ago with the HGTV show that's on their hometown, which we both like a great deal. And we've got the Napiers that are on there from that town. Laurel, what a gorgeous city to be from. Beautiful down there in the Mississippi area, but beautiful to also get to Tennessee to bring some of those small town values with you. And now you're bringing a little bit of Laurel and a little bit of Tennessee right into the Senate in Washington, D.C.
Well, you're right. Laurel was a great place to grow up, and it is a beautiful little town. And the Napiers and the Raspberry family, all of those are people that I've known. And I got to tell you, I know those houses that they're renovating and reworking. But here is the thing, whether it is Mississippi, Tennessee, or Indiana, small communities, which are the heartbeat of our states, are where you have those close friendships and relationships. You know the people that live in your neighborhood and
right.
you go to church with. And that fiber is what makes this nation so incredibly strong. And protecting those values that protect and actually add to the uniqueness of every single community, that is something important that we do every single day. And as we have so often said, the Senate is where you get that balance. We're kind of the firewall, if you will, that stops a lot of this bad legislation that erodes those freedoms.
No, and that's exactly right. And people need to realize sometimes, too, Senator, we're talking to Senator Marsha Blackburn from the great state of Tennessee. But one of the things that we need to realize is when we have senators, and even representatives in the House, standing up, taking a strong stand, sometimes putting their own political futures at risk by taking the stands that they take, they're actually doing that for us. We would have to be in there doing it were they not there. That's one thing I'm really looking forward to with Jim Banks. We have been a strong Jim Banks supporter since he went into the House, and now we look to stand for him there in the Senate, and I think it's going to be tremendous. And when I see him being able to move over to the Senate, and he'll have people there when he looks across to another desk or two, and there's Marsha Blackburn, you know, and there's Tom Cotton, and it's just a bevy of senators. We need more. We need more than just a minor working majority in the Senate. We need a good majority in the House and the Senate. Hopefully, if we keep our nose to the grindstone and we stop listening to everything that comes out of CNN, if we just keep working for it, Senator, we might just see a slightly larger, more effective majority in both houses. And I think then and only then we'll begin to realize exactly what's possible with some great people in the Senate like you and then Senator Jim Banks.
Well, and you sum it up very well, and this is the reason we need to make certain we take control of the Senate, that Republicans take control of the Senate, and that we send President Trump to the White House. And, of course, our House friends need to make certain that they hold the House, and then we'll be able to move forward and clean up some of this that Biden has done. You know, when you look at that open border, which is the number one issue, and everywhere that Jim and I have been today, people have talked about the adverse impact of that open border on Indiana. And every town's a border town, every state a border state. When you look at the human trafficking, the sex trafficking, the gangs, the labor crews, the MS-13, the Trandiagua, the Venezuelan gang, the Chilean gangs. When you look at the fentanyl, that's the number one killer of Americans ages 18 to 45, people are saying you've got to do something about this because the drugs and the gangs are the number one driver of crime in this country. And we have communities that have crime and have gangs that have never had crime or gangs. And it's all happened on Joe Biden's watch. When you look at what is happening with inflation, and that's the other issue we've heard a lot about today. People are very concerned about that. The price of a gallon of gas up 50%.
Right.
What it costs to heat and cool the house, 40%. Groceries are up nearly 30%. And you just can't fill up the gas tank and the grocery cart in the same week because prices are through the roof.
No, that's exactly right. And I'm afraid that it's all going to come crashing down. Joe Biden has played some tricks and sleight of hand with gas prices and what he's done with the excess that we had, which is supposed to be there in an excess reserve so that should we ever be at war and our military would all at once need a huge influx of gasoline, they would have it available. I don't know that we would have enough to go to war right now because they're dwindling it down so far. But when you've got that and you've got other attributes that keep wavering and they seem to go up and down like the stock market, that's not where I want to play with my gas or my electricity or anything else that speaks to the solidarity of the defense of our country. And last question, Senator, with what we're doing and playing with gasoline and playing with the different markets on things, and when you keep seeing the inflationary expenses that have come about because of what's gone on with this president, Joe Biden, it's astounding to me. And I look at it and I think, surely the United States will not go back and put him back in office again. My big fear is we might. And that's where, Senator, and I'll leave this last thought for you, just how important is it that everybody that is a God-fearing, God-loving American down to the core, and that we are a constitutional-loving Republican, how important is it that we make sure we get out and we pull the right levers on Election Day?
It is imperative that everybody show up and vote in the primary and then again in November. I would encourage everybody to go. And let me tell you something else. For people, I want you to go to church and look around you, because about half the people that go to church are registered to vote. The others are not. And only about half of those that are registered go vote. So go pick up some voter registration forms. Help people update their addresses and their voter registration and get registered to vote. Our fight is going to be what track we're going to be on. Do you want to be on the freedom track or do you want to be on the socialism track? And people are going to have the opportunity to make that choice. And they know sending Jim Banks to the U.S. Senate is on that freedom track. They know that it is going to be important that they vote all the way from the White House through the Senate, the State House, local elections, and make certain that they are voting for people who are constitutionalists, people that love the country, people that are going to fight to preserve their individual freedoms. And they need to realize this election is not about politicians. This election is about the people and the people being able to keep their freedoms and live the lives they want to live, not the life that the federal government would assign to them.
Well, and that's exactly right. And I'll be 70 in June. I know that you're just months older than me, although you look years younger and you've got far more vitality. I've lost more energy than you have. But it's amazing to me that we've got people on MSNBC and CNN and the alphabet soups of the ABC, CBS, NBC, and they want to tell me how I'm supposed to think and who I should put in. I should be thrilled with this person in the White House and that person in the Senate because they'll make sure that I'm taken care of. I'm not convinced. The only one who knows what I need in my life is me, the person of Jesus Christ, and the lovely Mrs. Miller. And none of them are aligning with anything coming out of the liberal left.
Well, you're probably right about that. And I tell you every day, I say, today I am going to fight to preserve five things: faith, family, freedom, hope, and opportunity. And if we get those right, then a lot of the other things will either fall by the wayside or they'll fit under one of those: faith, family, freedom, hope, and opportunity. And let's preserve that for all Americans.
Serving the state of Tennessee since 99 and serving all of us since 03 from the great state of Tennessee, Senator Marsha Blackburn. Senator Blackburn, thank you so very much. And thank Jim Banks for getting you on our airwaves today. And tell him he might have just earned enough brownie points with me today. I might even have him back someday.
Well, I'll let him know that his brownie point total is rising with you. And a pleasure to join you, and such a pleasure to be in Indiana today with Jim Banks.
Well, it's great to have you here. Godspeed on your travels, and thank you so very much. We're going to be back with more straight ahead.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
Closing time. Open up. dogs and let you out into the world.
Welcome back to the Pat Miller Program. There's a labor group that has said now that they have gotten California to pass into law with the according love of their governor, Gavin Newsom, they have put into place the $20 minimum wage for fast food workers. Well, now that labor group is demanding that California's $20 minimum wage be extended to every sector of work and industry. Every sector. There's a Foster's Freeze, which is a fast food place out there in California. One of their assistant managers is now a former assistant manager, and she reacts to this sudden closure and how others are responding to this bottom line. Their store closed because the owner said, I can't make it by paying this minimum wage, which, by the way, is a 25% increase in the minimum wage. 25%. Boom, just like that. Companies can't absorb that. You say, well, the big companies could. Really? You ready for the cost of your Chryslers to go up 25%? Your Fords, you ready for that? You ready for all your clothing to go up 25%? You ready for everything that goes into a new home, the nails, the aluminum, the building, the wood? Are you ready for it all to go up 25%? A fair wage advocacy group is now demanding that California's new one fair wage law, that it should be passed and be extended to all sectors to help working class people who are struggling with the state's high cost of living. Did you hear it? They're struggling with their state's high cost of living. Now, this is going to come into play again when I tell you a little bit about what it is that's going on. Fox Business spoke with president of One Fair Wage to discuss what she described as the skyrocketing levels of home insecurity and food insecurity post-pandemic. Fast workers winning a 20% minimum wage, she said, is just the beginning. This woman doesn't get it. I can't believe that she holds the position that she holds. She just doesn't get it. Are you going to boost everything up 25% and expect your state and your workers and everybody that you supposedly represent to stay employed, for the state to still be there? Do you think all that is going to happen magically? She pointed to the exorbitantly high cost of living in the Golden State, where in some counties, an individual would need a $40 an hour salary to live comfortably. Did the problem ever dawn on you that maybe the problem is not merely the wage, that maybe the problem is also the cost of living where you are? She says, people are leaving the state or are not having children or not having families. These are all the very basics we should be thinking about for humans living in California and needing to survive. Why? Because you're tired of them pulling out and moving to Alabama or moving to Colorado or moving to Indiana? Because they can come here and make the minimum wage closer to what they were making, but they can still get by here where they can't in California? Because survival is dependent upon a state. Your state's a mess, an absolute mess. She goes, I mean, the level of crisis that people have been enduring since the pandemic is severe. Well, Gavin Newsom signed this monster, which is AB 1228, back in September, went into effect earlier this month. This new law applies to restaurants and the workers there that have at least 60 locations nationwide. So your In-N-Outs, they qualify. Your Whataburgers qualify. Your McDonald's qualify. Your Burger King's qualify. Your Taco Bell's qualify. You just start racking them up. So that means this is going to explode for all of them. Restaurant owners, a lot of industry insiders warned them that the law was going to be detrimental to small businesses and consumers. One Los Angeles-based restaurant owner complained that there were going to be massive layoffs and massive job losses. And this is before the thing went into effect. Another former assistant manager at a Foster's Freeze in California described the new law as a shock. Well, this woman who heads up this financial group dismissed these concerns, arguing that such dire predictions have not been borne out in past minimum wage increases. It's because if you have a minimum wage increase of a buck or two, but when you raise it 25%, that's not chump change. What are you people smoking? Well, I know what you're smoking out there. Forget what I just said. No, but I mean, what is wrong with you? She goes, that is the argument they always make. Every single time the minimum wage bill was up, they always say it's going to kill businesses and jobs will be lost. And we've never seen it happen. Not in California, not in any other state. It has never happened. No, my darling, but it will. It just went into effect this month. You've already got people losing their jobs in big numbers. You've already got restaurants shutting their doors. She argued that the raising of the minimum wage will put more money into workers' pockets who in turn spend their extra earnings stimulating the economy and growing industries. We'll see you again next Saturday. We'll do it right here from noon to 3. This has been the Pat Miller Program on WOWO 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.